What if I tell you that having a baby could be easy? How can you have your beautiful, positive, unmedicated, and natural birth so that you can step into your conscious motherhood? Hello, my name is Bibi. I am a midwife, a birth coach, and I am an early motherhood coach. And I'm here to show you how birth can be easy. You know why? You're never going to forget that day, and you want it to be the best day of your life. Tune in while we'll dive in on how you can have your positive birth and you can have a positive motherhood. Happy listening. Welcome, welcome, welcome to this new episode of Your Holistic Midwife. I'm Bibi, your favorite midwife. And today I am joined by my favorite person in the world, and we have Emily. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you are here. Do you just want to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. My name is Emily Saldea. I live on a beautiful 80 acres in Western North Carolina over here in the States. And I was a doula and a birth worker in the system for 10 years. And I started at 16. And then around 26, I left the system and started attending Sovereign Birth, Birth Outside the System. And after a couple years of that, I launched Free Birth Society, which is my company. And it kind of just like went viral. And soon after that, I launched an authentic midwifery school called the Radical Birthkeeper School with my content creator partner, Yolanda Norris-Clark. And now my life is very busy with all sorts of things that we do at Free Birth Society, which is primarily a platform educating women who are interested in birth outside the system and or attending birth outside the medical system.
Yeah, that's amazing. I am in the membership and I'm loving it. So I hope to be able to do the school as well, maybe next year. See how
we go. Oh my gosh, so fun.
Yes, yes. So Emily, what are we going to talk today? So I think we wanted to discuss a little bit about your birth stories, because I always hear a lot of stories in your podcast, and I saw some of your videos on your channel as well, and I was like, why don't I just bring you onto my podcast and we will get you to share your birth story. So it's very interesting, all the thing that you said, starting from you've been a doula in the system. So by the time you were pregnant with your first baby, what time of the life was it? Just take us along this journey.
Yeah. So like I said, I started attending birth at 16, and when did I give birth? I don't think I gave birth until I was 30 or 31. So I was already attending births outside the system. It's like so much to say, because it's such a crazy period of my life. I was a really, really busy doula and medical midwife's assistant. I was on the track to become a medical midwife, and it never really felt right. And then the short version is, when I felt ready after I married my husband, when I felt ready to conceive, I just had this big light bulb moment where I realized I wasn't going to be able to birth with any of the midwives in Los Angeles, because I, as a professional birth worker, had already seen what they do. And it was fucked up. And I didn't want my baby or my body anywhere near the nonsense that I had been seeing for so long. And so, yeah, that's quite a gift, because many women that come to the liberation, you know, birth movement are first hurt, you know, and I was hurt in a way. I had plenty of secondary trauma, but I don't personally have birth trauma, because I didn't birth in the system. Not to say that's the only way it can happen, but that's certainly a guaranteed way for it to happen. So anyway, I decide that, I decide I'm going to just birth alone. And there weren't any women in my life doing what I was doing for others, right? So now we have all these RBK graduates, and that's just so epic that there's actually many women around the world now publicly doing what some midwives have always done privately and secretly. I understand that, but there was no real public movement around it. Now, I was doing it secretly. I was attending births very underground. Very few people knew. Yeah. And so as I got ready to conceive, I went on this big kind of pilgrimage to India and Indonesia. And I spent a couple months over there, some alone, some with some sisters of mine, and just spent a lot of time thinking about where I was heading and what it meant to compass my life towards motherhood and what it was going to take to change, what things I needed to change. I knew I wanted to get out of the city. I couldn't imagine being pregnant in Los Angeles. And so I knew that I was going to leave, and my husband got a job up in the mountains, in the Redwoods. Anyway, so all of that is to say, I did a lot of rearranging and a lot of contemplation and a lot of active shifts in my life before I got pregnant. And one of the reasons I knew to do that, I have been motivated by motherhood my whole life, but seeing what happens when you enter motherhood unconsciously is so bad. It's so, so bad. It's the risk of that is so great. And I knew too much about what happens. I knew too much, you know, because I'd seen it for so long. So I decide I'm in a birth on my own. I find out there's a term for that. It's called free birth. And I just know I'm going to do that. And what does that mean for me and my work, my place in my community, and all of it. And so, you know, of course it all coalesces together because I come home from India and decide I'm going to really publicly, you know, journal this pregnancy and my birth. And I'm going to be really public about this because one of my big motivations to do so was, one, no one had done it yet. And so it was very hard to find like-minded women, which we need in order to evolve. And then the other piece was I knew that if I put my, you know, bat symbol up there, the women would come, you know, and so it was selfish in large part. I wanted to call my big sisters to me, women who had walked this path before. I really needed that and wanted that and did not know anyone. I mean, I didn't know any woman in my life.
What year was this?
Maybe like 2016.
Yeah, that feels like it.
Because, oh yeah, I got married in 2016. So
yeah,
it was
that feels like it. Yeah.
So yeah, it was very big. It was very deep. There was a lot to it. It wasn't, yeah, it was like a total reshaping and maturation process for who I am as a woman, you know, entering conscious motherhood. And I had by this point kind of forced Yolanda to be my friend. At that point, she was still a long distance friend who becomes one of the most important women in my life. And she had already been on this path for a long time. And she gave me the term wild pregnancy, which she made up. And a wild pregnancy is just being pregnant as an integrated part of life where you don't opt into the system in any way, no surveillance, no technology, no testing. And so I go to an ayahuasca ceremony, well, quite a few, before I'm ready to conceive. That was really helpful in many ways. Met my spirit babies there, you know, shredded some of my ego. It was good. And then I enter, you know, opening up the portal with my partner, and it took two rounds. So the first round, you know, I just assumed I would get pregnant, and I actually think I may have, but I bled. And that was so good. That was so helpful to just like smack me like, honey, you are in for it. You think this shit is just going to go your way? Like, that's so cute. Such a maiden, you know, it was very sweet. And yeah, so then I get pregnant on the second time, and then it was on. And I have a wild pregnancy that was very deep with a lot of work, as it can be.
So you had no no testing, no ultrasound, nothing for your first pregnancy. Is that correct?
Yeah, I had literally no interest in it. But I had already spent years figuring out how I wanted to do this, you know, from a really like deep discovery process.
So how, what year was it when you fell pregnant?
2017.
2017. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
So it was an interesting pregnancy. I spent a lot of time alone, which is not my default at all, but I needed to like off gas the city. You know, like I needed to learn how to drive differently. I needed to learn how to walk differently. I needed to learn how to sleep differently. The urban life and consciousness, you know, and I'm specifically referring to LA, but it's not the most unique situation. You know, the cigarette smells, the trash, the crackheads, you know, the beggars, the traffic, the gridlock. I mean, I would drive to my medical midwife job and it was normal that it would take an hour. And in bumper to bumper, just there's so much wound up energy in that. And so, yeah, I really needed to just decompress from a city life. And yeah, I spent a lot of time alone. My husband worked a lot and I spent a lot of time outside, a lot of time in the rivers and with the deer, and it was good. It brought, you know, the work that it needed to do. I think that one of the biggest, there were two pieces in my wild pregnancy that I'd say were kind of like the most work. One was I almost drowned at 13, 14 weeks.
Wow, what
And
happened?
yeah, my guy and I went, it was super hot where we were living in the summertime, and there's a river that everyone goes in inner tubes and cools down. And I had already done this track on the river like quite a few times, and there's a lot of rocks. It's a whitewater river, but yeah, I just went down this sketchy section and I just did it wrong, and my inner tube flipped upside down and the tube goes on top of me. But the problem is now I'm in the Whitewater River and the boulders that make up the, you know, the track, the boulders are just throwing me around. And thankfully I didn't have any like blunt trauma to my abdomen or anything, but I was held underwater, couldn't catch my breath. And I realized I was drowning pretty quickly. And I realized I was too caught up in the current to really do anything about it. And it took me a second to kind of realize how serious it was. Because I grew up in oceans and getting pulled in rip tides, and it's not like the first time that's ever happened, but yeah, it was crazy. Anyway, so then I see this one rock and I kind of game out pretty quickly that if I can't swim to this rock, I'm fucked because the next section is way worse. And so with everything that I could possibly muster, I swam as hard as I possibly could and got to this rock, and I was all scratched up and beaten up. And so I go back home. So Johnny had been ahead of me, so he's like running, trying to come back. And we go home and I'm, you know, kind of adrenalized and figuring out how I feel. And I really noticed this knee-jerk reaction about the baby. And I'm like, I want to go to the hospital and get an ultrasound. And it was the first time I'd had that thought and the last time I've had that thought. But I was like, oh, here's the work. Oh, okay. I was like wondering when that was going to come up, and here it is. And so I said it out loud, and I was like, and he was like, yeah, you know, like, what do you think that would give you? And I was like, well, it's going to tell me if the baby's alive. And what would it be like if I didn't do that? And what is here, like, to sit in? And can I know my baby's alive without outside surveillance? I don't know. And do I need to know? And I remember going by myself. He like went and left me alone. And I remember laying on my yoga mat and just sobbing and feeling so much fear in my body, so much fear as I contended with the concept that I wasn't in control and that there was this opportunity here to give myself to the great mystery, you know, and it hurt. It really hurt. It was scary and it hurt. And that is the choice I made. And it was at an interesting time in the pregnancy because I wasn't feeling the baby yet. You know, I wasn't really showing yet. It was my first pregnancy. So it was like early. And yeah, I love that. And I'm so grateful for that experience. I'm so grateful for my willingness to sit in that discomfort because I knew. And the lesson that came to me when I was crying on my yoga mat was I like kind of make fun of myself a lot, not in a critical way, in like a silly sisterly way. But I said to myself, you think this shit's scary? Like, wait until this baby is outside of your body. Wait until this baby is driving a car and goes to a party. Like, this is just the beginning. And if you can't handle this, you're screwed, man. You're so screwed. And I could feel myself at this spiritual, psychological crossroads of like, what kind of mom am I gonna be? Am I gonna be anxious and worried and a control freak and the need to know and can never relax? Like, is that what I'm gonna do? And I could see the part of me that was set up to unconsciously choose that, right? And if I had chosen obstetrics, I would have done it unconsciously. I would have done it because that's the setup. And I really interrupted it. And it's already not my personality to be anxious and worry and all of that. But I could feel the invitation for sure. Anyway, so I very consciously chose to not do that. And that wasn't the kind of mother I wanted to be. And it was in these moments within the wild pregnancy where I got the opportunity to practice it first, right? It'll never stop. And then the other big thing that happened throughout the whole pregnancy was I had an underground midwife friend up in Canada who had attended a birth with a baby who, I can't remember the condition the baby had. They called it Zika, but I don't think it actually was Zika, but it was a very similar set of problems, you could say. And long story short, the baby was born without a full head and without a full face developed, and it died soon, you know, after it was born. And it was a totally like off-grid underground birth. And you know, that happens. Not commonly at all. No one needs to freak out. It's very uncommon, but you know, everything happens.
And just to add something, it happened to me also when I was a midwife at the hospital. Ugh. And my colleague was actually looking after a woman in the hospital and the baby died. So it's like, it can happen, like it happened at the hospital and it happens outside of the hospital. So it's just life, really.
Totally. I mean, I would much prefer the story of how it went for this family. You know, they were none the wiser. They birthed their baby. Their baby wasn't going to live in any situation, and it didn't. And that baby died at home in that mother's arms, you know? So anyway, I knew about that story. And for some reason, that was my thing. That was my thing I made up to freak out about. Anytime I wanted to freak out, I would just make up that the thing I felt like I was tested that I couldn't handle. It was quite specific. It would be my baby doesn't have a face. And I don't know that. Like, that is a crazy idea that I don't know if my baby is formed. And specifically, I got hung up on the face thing because of my friend. It felt like a, you know, real life thing. And also I took it lightly. It's very rare that something like that would happen. And it's not actually about the content. And that's another, I think, important thing for women to hear. It's the candy you're giving your brain to freak out about. It's just the candy. Don't take the candy.
And we all do it. We all do it all the time.
Of course. And thankfully I had enough self-awareness to know that. And so when I would trip about this face thing, I knew that I was making something up to explore what it was like to not know, right? And I have enough experience in birth work. Obviously, I've worked with women my entire adult life in this realm. And so I know that we are constantly, whatever phase we're at, whatever stage we're at, we're going to look for the thing to worry about, to freak out about, to really how I would frame it now is, what are we going to use to cap how good we can feel as we expand, right? And so that would be my thing. And that was it. And so another piece here I haven't mentioned is, since I was 12, since the first time I went to the Hawaiian Islands, I knew that I would birth my first child there. The story goes in my family, my dad moved there when I was, like maybe 10 or 11 or 12. And the first time I went there, the story goes that I got off the plane and I looked around at the airport and I said, I will birth my child here. And I did. So I always had this sense. I've spent a lot of time in Hawaii and I've always had just a draw to, I mean, it's Hawaii. It's pretty epic. And it's just like so obvious. It's such a nurturing, abundant, maternal place, nature-wise. And it's epic. And, you know, I'm here to do epic things and I'm here to write an epic story for myself and for my family and with myself and with my family. And so, yeah, I got this like crazy idea that I was like, what else are we doing? Like, what else are we doing in our life? Like every kid we add, it's arguably we're going to get more and more grounded, rooted to a place. We don't own a home yet. We have this savings because we worked the whole year to save so that we could go have like a destination birth. And thankfully, you know, my guy's always like, let's go. So we saved up from his job and lived, you know, pretty cheaply for maybe a year or so out in the sticks in the woods in Northern California. And then we went when I was about, I think we flew when I was about 36 weeks. And stayed with some family while we house hunted. And it got a little dicey towards the end because housing is complicated in Hawaii. It's very expensive. It's very hard to find. And it's commonplace nowadays that people will only rent to locals or locals might not be the politically correct term, but people who have lived on the island for more than a couple years. Anyway, so that got a little stressful, a little hairy towards the end, because we're like creeping up into the time. And I had one at about 38 weeks or 37 weeks, I had a monumental tantrum, like the biggest tantrum of my life as an adult, I would say. And I was positive for about 30 minutes. I was positive that everything I had decided was wrong and I should have not gotten pregnant. And we should not be here. And I was not going to love this baby. And I remember crying to Johnny and him just going, hey, whenever you don't love the baby, I'll just love them more. It's fine. And I was like, love is so sweet. Yeah, he's so sweet. You'll love him twice as much because I don't think I love her. I just had a total freak out for about 30 minutes. Got over it. We found the house, nested. Had an amazing about 6 weeks in the home, and then that brings us up to the birth. If you want me to get into that,
yeah, go for it. So, well, you didn't know, did you know, like roughly how many weeks? You know, we are using the terminology that everybody goes by. Mm-hmm. So, did you know roughly how many weeks were you at that point?
I went into labor just past 40 because we had a party on my 40 week and we called it, there's no such thing as a due date party, and it was a 40 week party and everyone came and all my friends around the island and my family and everyone came, and Johnny made a cake that said there's no such thing as a due date on it, and it was super fun. And then I think it was the next day or maybe the next day, we spent all day on the beach. I had friends fly in from LA. And I had been at their births, so that was kind of cute. They came with their families and we had a long day at the beach. And In hindsight, I definitely was feeling high and stony. And when you see the pictures of me, I look like I had smoked a huge blunt, but I didn't really realize it when it was happening. But anyway, we had a long beach day. And then we went and got pizza. And all I really remember was we went and got pizza. We came home. We were pooped, fell asleep, and then woke up and had sex, which was kind of like a random thing to do that we fell asleep, you know, like that's not like a normal thing in our.
Love it.
It sounds nice, but. And then we did that. And then at 3 a.m, I woke up with sensations and then it just was on. I mean, I go on to have what felt like a very long birth because it was longer than what I had really experienced with any sort of consistency in the, you know, in captivity. 'Cause my birth goes on to be 52 hours, which in the free birth world now I understand that that's not even interesting. Honestly, it's like not interesting. Like when people tell me about their 4-day births, I'm like, great. It's not even interesting to me, you know, 'cause it's so normal, but I didn't understand that yet. And so,
because at that point you were just out from the system, correct?
I mean, it was kind of a straddle for a period of time because I was still running my nonprofit, which was sourcing doulas for families in LA. And I wasn't really attending in the system. I was mostly attending outside the system.
Yeah.
But it was still, I mean, I think about who I was then and who I am now.
Yeah.
I still was working my shit out. Another huge piece to this was I was in the early phases of collecting my allies in this way of thinking, whereas now I've had 6 years to do it, or 7 or whatever, or even more. So, you know, and I have so many allies in this now. And so I think that was a part of why some stuff just took so damn long.
Yeah. You
so
were still processing somehow.
Yeah.
Your
Which
brain
I mean,
was
I still
like,
am.
Two people fighting.
It was, I mean, I will be honest, I entered my birth very confident. I entered it with no fear. I understood that birth was designed to decimate me, but I like couldn't imagine how it would do that. Now I do understand because I've gone through it twice, but I was excited. I felt calm and grounded and ready. My partner was calm, grounded, and ready. And so here's the blind spot though. I realized in hindsight, which I didn't know this going in, hence blind spot, but in hindsight, I realized that I made up the story that because I wasn't afraid and because there was no one there that would sabotage me, it would go quickly. Terrible. That's not true, guys. It's not true at all. But I just made it up. It's so weird. Like even my conscious birth worker mind understands that's not true. But as a mom who just like didn't catch it, man, I just made it up. So I didn't know I was working with that story. You know, it reveals itself because I attempted to sabotage my birth and then thankfully got it back on track. But I'm going to go through parts of this kind of quickly because it's a long story. So
Yeah. We're here for it.
So early labor is so amazing. I loved it so much. I remember going into the shower and just crying with gratitude that I got to finally do this. I just was in such awe. I had been watching women birth humans into this world since I was 16. And it was my whole life, you know, like I dedicated my entire adult life to this path and this way of knowing and this way of being. And here I am with my baby in Hawaii, actualizing my life's dream. It is just so big. And I really felt it. And yeah, just cried. It was like, holy shit, I get to do this. Wow. And so that was great. And loved the early phases of that birth. And then I had my sister, my blood sister come in and out a bit. And then my like soul sisters come in and out a bit. And that was all fine. But the problem that I made up was at around 24 hours when the baby wasn't there, I started to pathologize it, which was a real bummer. And I didn't have anyone like me there to talk any freaking sense into me. Like, I know what I say to women who do this, because I'm like, yeah, of course you are. Just like, calm down. You know, I know what to say. But I had purposely only invited people who were unfamiliar with birth, which, you know, there's a pro and a con to that, obviously. So around 24 hours, you know, I'm having like big, strong sensations. I'm thinking, surely I'm towards the end. And this is so classic first time mom, especially in the free birth world where no one's like orienting them. And I just got really unoriented is probably the best way of framing it. And so around 24 hours in, my water's open, which is great, except it's like another, whatever the math is, another 30 hours before baby's here, which again, totally normal, totally, totally normal. But the story that I had put on my birth is what ran away from me. It had nothing to do with the actual, absolutely normal physiological unfolding of my birth. So it was funny because when I went into labor, I was three nights away from the full moon. And I had the thought, oh, I'm not going to birth with the full moon. Spoiler alert, 3 days later, I absolutely birthed with the full moon. And it was like this super blood moon eclipse. It was like the craziest moon you can have. So epic. So there is an eclipse. And that was interestingly, when the moon eclipses, is the darkest couple hours of my birth where I was like not okay and where I was just making shit up. So I want to say before I get into, I guess, the real place where I dramatize this is because this influences my birth keeping so much. I was entering a very, very psychedelic space, but it wasn't all rainbows and butterflies. There was darkness in the room. You know, I had this like anytime I went into the near the shower area, I mean, this is going to sound very weird, but I could hear an old male voice fucking with me. I would hear this thing whenever I'd go near the shower that was like, this isn't really your birth. You're not really in labor. You're making all this up. And I remember one time like moving away and just shaking my head to Johnny going, don't let me back in there, you know? And obviously if we get into the spiritual landscape of birth, like the veil is thin to non-existent. You are traveling, you know, do we even have words to describe it? Some people say the underworld, some people say the cosmos. I would just say we're
not describe it.
You can't describe it. It's a spiritual terrain. And there are things that happen that cannot be condensed or articulated in this physical realm that you and I currently share. It just can't be. And so I was in that terrain. It was dark and deep and not really scary, but I was fucking out there. And this is where an authentic midwife, a good birth keeper, would really come in, and I would call her a shaman, you know, like a person who actually knows what she's doing, which is so hard to find, but a woman who actually understands what I just described. I would call her a shaman, you know, of this birth space. And that was the point where if I had had that, the next, you know, chapter would have gone very differently. But I didn't. And the people that were with me were deferring to me, which is what I set up. You know, I totally own it for sure. And so then what transpires next is I make up that I'm pushing because I've never pushed before. And so, and this is so classic first time mom stuff, that my baby was coming down. I mean, I was towards the end, but I had no idea what pushing felt like. I had seen it hundreds of times, but I had no actual idea. And so the rectal pressure that I was feeling with contractions at that stage, I mean, if we were to go into like medical terms, my guess would be I was probably like 6-7 centimeters at this point. And for lots of, especially first time moms, when they start to do the But then they go back, they think they're about to have a baby, right? Not, you might really have like 12 more hours, who knows? But anyway, so I just like totally was in that. And so where I'm going with this is that I made up that because I'd been doing that for so long and because the baby wasn't here, I must have a swollen cervix. I just made it up. It's so
swollen cervix. Where is this coming from?
It's so funny. It's coming from, girl, you know how many births I've seen where they do that shit? You know, where they force the vaginal exams when the woman gets pushy. I mean, it's deep programming, yeah. You know? And yeah. It feels like pretty cleared out from me now. But it wasn't then. And I this wasn't conscious, you know, this was unconscious, which is how it gets you. It was unconscious. But what is true in that birth is that I made up a story that I remember saying to my husband, I can't say for sure that everything's okay. I was like, I can't say for sure. Like, if based on what I can grasp right now, we're going long. My waters are open. There's mech in the waters. None of that I really cared about.
There was mech also.
Yeah. But like, that actually didn't, I was just like, whatever. But it was the pushing that was unproductive, right? There's these horrific misogynistic terms, you know, that were still in my head. And so
I'm laughing out.
Oh yeah. I think that, you know, for birth workers who are hearing this, like what would have changed my life in that moment was to have someone I respected hug me, you know, and say, yep, of course you can't say that everything's okay, because this is, you're in so deep. And I see you. You're in so deep. You're fucking killing it, girl. You know, like, you're killing it. This is it. You are doing it. This is birth. You have now officially arrived into birth. Now that you don't know shit, you're officially in labor, right? I mean, I would have wanted less words than that, but you get my point. Like, this is it. You're now doing it. And so no one knew to do that, right? So anyway, let's move along. So I decide at some point, well, at like hour 48, I guess at this point, in hindsight, I know that. I'm like, I feel like I gotta go. As crazy as that is, I feel like I need to go get a cervical exam and make sure that I'm not pushing on a swollen cervix, because if I am, I'm gonna fuck up my birth, which is like hilarious. Right. This is what we do. This is what we do. Like, I have so much compassion for transfer stories, because you're not thinking clearly and you're working out your like gnarly programming, you know? So we go and we pack a bag. Do you not know my story?
Really, this part, I missed it. Yeah. I'm like, what?
Oh yeah, it gets crazy. It's like an awesome story. So so we pack a bag, and I remember my husband was wearing a Free Birth Society shirt, and I looked at him and I was like, change your fucking shirt. Like, you're not wearing that in my transfer, fucker.
Oh my God.
And I just, it was so devastating, and I knew I was choosing it. And as I walk outside, the moon has eclipsed and it's dark. It was like maybe 2 in the morning. And it just was weird. And my sister drives us, it's like 30 minutes or something, to the hospital. We go in silence, but also I'm pushing. Like, you know, I'm like totally in labor, like at the end of my labor. So it's not like that goes away. And so I'm so uncomfortable. I mean, you know, all the stupid stuff about that. And I'm like pushing. And so now as we head into the hospital, I'm like, I need to get my game face on. I'm heading into war. I know this terrain, like the back of my hand, like I'm going to bring it together. The problem was I was high as a kite. I was so high on birth. You know, I was in this whole other world. And then we like show up to the ER and there's like some dude with a wheelchair. And I'm like, all right, I'm not high anymore. Like, I'm in this world now. It's like trying to talk to the cops on mushrooms or something.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah, they try to put me in a wheelchair and I'm like, no, thank you. And like, he keeps asking me and I'm like, this is getting weird, man. Like, I'm gonna walk. Thank you. And I go up and, you know, I say like, and I say, I'm not sure that I'm gonna be admitted. I would like an exam. I'd like to talk about what's going on. And so we get into a room and, you know, I have no records, like nothing, you know, and a nurse gives me an exam. And I remember being on my back and I wanted it, right? Like I wanted this crazy, crazy ritual. It's so wild. And so I'm like on my back doing the thing. And yeah, she fingers me deeply and she says, oh, I feel the baby, something like, I feel the baby, you have a cervical lip, but like not swollen at all. And then the OB comes in, it's a woman. She comes in and without like asking me or saying anything, she goes inside me and like does a follow-up fingering. And then I kind of like reports the same thing. I don't really remember, but now I'm on my back with my knees up, like getting a vaginal exam. And she says, okay, on the next sensation, or you know, on the next contraction, I want you to push. And that was when I snapped out of it. Was I like, it was almost, I'm not going to call it an out of body experience because I felt actually very in my body, but it was like one of those moments where I was like, what the fuck am I doing? You know? And I'm like on my back. It's crazy with these strangers being like, I'm like, finger me, please. And then they're like, you're going to push. And my sister's there, my husband's there. And I'm like, this is nuts. And so I snap out of it and I sit up. And I'm like, I can barely move, you know, I'm about to have a baby. And so Johnny like helps me off the table and they're like, ma'am, what are you doing? What are you doing? And I was like, everyone just shut up for a second. And I'm like, can we have a minute? And she's like, ma'am, your baby's coming, you know? And I was like, just shut up. And then I look at Johnny and I look at my sister and Johnny looks at me. And I think the story goes, because I have this one vivid memory of him looking at me smiling and he goes, you want to get out of here? And I was like, yes, I do. And I was like fully
Bless
back on
him,
top.
bless the
Yeah.
man.
Oh, he's so down. He was the only one that gave me pushback about going. He said to me when I was like, I think I'm gonna go, he said, you told me we only go if one of you are dying and you're not dying. That's what he said. And I was like, I hear you. That is correct. I'm changing the rules. And he was like, fuck it. All right. So, yeah. So he's like, you wanna get out of here? And I'm like, let's do it. And so they come back in and I'm like, thank you so much. I got what I came for. I'm gonna go. And they were like, would you at least sign an AMA? And I said, I will sign it if it can happen very fast. And right after that, I have my first real pushing, you know, like where it's real. I'm like, oh, that's pushing. Oh, shit. We gotta go. So I have my first real one, like with no cervix, you know, real bait, you know, the real thing, which feels completely different. But I'm still in the little triage room. So the AMA happens quickly. I'm willing to sign it. Then the doctor, you know, it was minimal fear-mongering. There, I will give her credit. At the very end when I left, she said, if anything changes and you need us, please come back. And I was like, I appreciate that. Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, it could have been worse. It really wasn't that bad. I also feel like I was so clear of what was happening. Like there was no other I was not wishy-washy. Like as soon as I realized there was no swollen cervix, I realized I had made up a story to sabotage my birth and I was like in a different state of consciousness. And so the funny part is as we're leaving, it's nurse changeover. It's like, you know, 5 a.m. or whatever. We've been there for about 45 minutes. And so the nurses are all coming on shift. So they're like flooding in from all the doors and all the whatever. And everyone thinks we're lost. And so all these people are like, L&D's that way. L&D's that way. Turn around. You're going the wrong way. And we're like, we're trying to escape this place. It was really funny. So then like my sister like guns the Jeep and gets us loaded up, and she put towels all over because it's my dad's like nice ass car. And we're thinking we're gonna have the baby in the car. And so everyone's back on top. We're all stoked. We're laughing. I'm pushing. There's fluid going everywhere. Like, I'm like, I don't care. If we have a baby in the car, let's do it. You know, now that I'm out of the prison, you know, place. And so my sister guns it up the mountain because our little house is up on Haleakala on the volcano, and guns it up country. And we're just like windows down. And as we get there, I like waddle my ass up the stairs, and I take one look at the sky right before I come back into our little house, and the eclipse was ending and the moon fully was showing herself. And it was just like, I'm good. We're going to go have this baby. So we go inside, my sister relights the candles, Johnny lays some Chuck's pads out. I get back into my bedroom, I get on my knees, and I had a quick little, I remember just saying like, I'm so sorry, baby. I don't know what that was, but we're back. You can be born now. Like, it's all good. I'm good. You come on now. And she was born 40 minutes later. So I pushed for another 40 minutes, and it was awesome. And I loved it. It was not hard. It was, I wouldn't really describe it as pain. It was big, you know, but all the fear I had alchemized everything in the earlier part of the birth. And so I was so ready for her. I was so ready for everything that was to come. And then as I told you before we were recording, her head gets born with quite a bit of meconium, and minutes go by. And minutes go by, and I'm like, what is this? Like, this is not, I don't love this. I remember on the video, I'm just like, I don't like that mech. How long has it been? Like, I don't like this. And everything's fine, but her head gets born with no body for 11 minutes, which is not normal.
No contractions at all.
I mean, maybe there were waves, but it didn't get the baby out. I don't know. It was because I have it all filmed. It's like, yeah, the timer is 11 minutes. And I feel like, you know, I'm feeling her ear. Like, I'm talking to her during it. Yeah. I feel her restitution. Like, it wasn't shoulder dystocia or anything. It was her head was born. I can feel all the way down. But that is not normal, or common, I should say. That is not a common story. That would never be tolerated with medical providers. Yeah. And there we are. So then she gets born, and she's very slow to start. It's all normal stuff, but she's quite slow to start. She's quite limp. She's like whitish to blue, but it's pretty dark in the, you know, the room. The sun is coming up right as she's born. And everything was perfect. I mean, there was no concern. I've seen so many babies transition, and just, yeah, I had like worked out my weird little glitch already. Yeah. And there she was. And then the placenta came maybe like 2.5 hours later. And I love that story so much. And I will say, well, I'll stop for a second. I want to say something about postpartum.
That is an amazing story. And I didn't know the hospital part, actually. That is just amazing. Like, I think like the thing that I like the most is that you, like, the darkness came during your labor. You worked through it. And like, I admire you so much because you had the strength to work through it. Sometimes, you know, this comes through labor, and sometimes women cannot work through it. And that's when we go through another pathway, you know?
And I also think it's important whenever I share this story to anyone that will listen to this, I want to just be very clear that I got lucky. You know,
that's like exactly right.
Yeah. My story is not, it's not easy to repeat. And it's not because I'm so amazing. It's that hospital was dead that night. I got a nice doctor. No one wanted to make an issue. No one called social workers on me. I know so many stories of women who go thinking they're just going to get checked out and they leave with C-sections and babies in NICU. So I don't want to make light of how easy it was for me to leave. I do think I have a pretty like authoritative vibe about me, but that I do not think is bulletproof for the system. And so I don't want anyone to get me wrong. I got really lucky and I want you to take it very seriously if you choose to go, because my story is not very easy to repeat.
That is true. And I think also what really helped you, as you said at the beginning, was all the work that you have been doing. You know, you just needed that, I guess, slap.
God. Why did I do
during birth to be like, hi, do you want to do this? Yes or no? This is your chance, yeah. You know?
Totally. Yeah. I love it. I love my story so much. And then what I wanted to share about postpartum was I just had no idea. And now I've gone through two, but I had no idea that an intact postpartum is designed to up-level your consciousness so much. Like I had no idea how much pleasure and euphoria and creativity I was going to access. And most postpartums I had ever supported were so dysfunctional. And they were so, there was so much grieving in the postpartum because the woman had an epidural when she wanted the natural birth, or she had the transfer, or even the births that wind up staying at home. There's still often some unspoken narrative that like something needed to happen, or she didn't like quite do it, you know, like it's very multi-layered. But anyway, I had a really intact, minus that little 40-minute glitch, you know, a really intact experience. And my only grieving about my birth was realizing what almost happened, you know. I was totally at peace with my choices because, like, thank God it worked out, you know, and I went back home. Like, who does that? Who does that? That's such a rare story. Yeah. And so that, I mean, my tears of grief were like, oh my God, like, I almost surrendered us entirely to dark forces, you know? Anyway, and then connecting me, I was very surprised by how connected I would feel to all the mothers the planet over. Like I remember in those days following this psychedelic sense that I could feel the current of Mother Earth herself and how hurt it was, or she was, or we are, you know. It's again hard to articulate, but it was heartbreaking and powerful and up-leveling and so deep. And no one had ever talked to me about the postpartum landscape before, or what was available, or what could happen, you know, because I think most women who've ever talked to me were in survival mode, and I wasn't. I was experiencing postpartum in, I call, thrivival mode. You know, I was like,
I feel you. People think I'm crazy. And I'm like, I am glad to know that I was not the only one.
Yeah. It was so amazing and slow and beautiful and sexual and creative and just like, wow, it blew me away. Yeah. Yeah. I'll add that my daughter's name is Sunye, and I've known that was going to be her name since I was 16, 17, because she came to me in a meditation and told me that was going to be her name. But her name means to listen to the heartbeat of the earth. It means like deep, deep, deep listening. And that's exactly what her birth and her postpartum did to me.
Wow. That is so good. So you were born and reborn, I would say.
Of course.
Yeah. And then
if you're not reborn, are you even doing it?
That is so true. And you know, I just want to add something to what you said about the postpartum, that Like my real passion, it is in the postpartum. But what I have learned through my journey is that when women don't get it right during the birth, there is nothing I can do or say during the postpartum. It's just it's like they're just running to survive whatever happened then. And so I'm like, after having my twins, especially, I shifted all my work and I'm like, no, we gotta do this birth stuff. We gotta get it right. We gotta, you know, just help them, help all the women as much as we can, because that hurtness that you felt, I felt it. I felt it as well. And I was like, okay, now we need to do something.
Well, I mean, women need to be having births. Women deserve to have births that they don't need to recover from.
Exactly.
It's insane. It's like the most fucked up thing that's happening.
Yeah.
You know, because if women have intact births where they're experiencing and accessing their creative power, then they're embodied mothers. Their children are integrated. Those children don't become rapists. You know, they don't become pedophiles. Like, come on. It's not like that complicated of a formula.
I know, right? I know. You're completely right. But anyway, let's continue. What happened next?
Okay, so we chose to do a pretty long age gap on purpose. So we have the baby. We're there for like 2 more months. We're kind of like bored after a while. And we're like, all right, it's time to like do something. And I had big plans for Free Birth Society. And it was very obvious to me that it wasn't going to happen on a remote island. I needed to network the women. I needed to have Matriarch Rising Festival. Like I needed to be somewhere where people could come with ease, blah, blah, blah. So Johnny gets a job in Colorado. We go there. We're there for a couple years until COVID hits. And yeah, that was good. You know, that's like when FBS starts to really take off. That's when we launched the Complete Guide to Free Birth, our first offering. That's when we launched the Radical Birthkeeper School, which crushes on its first year. It's great. Everything's awesome. We take the biggest life leap of our life so far, where we decide Johnny's going to quit his job and he's going to stay home because we want an intact family. And the intact birth and the intact postpartum really led to that. Like him working out of the home and me being home alone with the baby, which is like totally normal. That's what most families do. Fucking sucked. It was so dysfunctional. And we were pretty functional for what is like objectively dysfunctional. And so, yeah, I just wasn't feeling it. And so I was like, you know what, man? We're not living our dream life. Like, this is not as good as it can be. Like, we got to really reorient to how good it can be and not get caught up in this, like, make money, pay rent shuffle that, you know, is so easy. It's so easy to blink and boom, we've been doing that for 3 years. So, yeah, we talked a lot about it and we knew that he was going to stop working. He was surrendering a 6-figure job. So it was not like a small thing for us. I was not making enough money to sustain us yet. And I knew that we had to do it. And I knew that this was one of those leaps that you jump and you let your life catch you, you know, and let your life, like you show your life that you're down, you know, and then your life's like, let's go. And every time I've done that, it's done that. So we do that and he stops working and is now like around, which is an instant shift for our household in so many ways. And then COVID hits and the cliff notes here is, you know, I never participated in any of it and was not willing to, had no interest in it. And we bounced out of Denver pretty quickly and went and hid in this little mountain town called Pagosa Springs. And we hid out there for a couple months. They were pretty untouched by all the, shenanigans. And I kept being like, it'll be over. At some point, it'll be over. But it kept not being over. And so after a couple of months, we were like, we need water independence. You know, we need to own water rights because we don't know how crazy this is going to get. And out in the West, where I was from primarily, water is very, very, very controlled. And so we just took a hard look at what matters to us, what are our family's values, what are the laws that each state has, like what states work best for what we're after, and what story do we want to write? And we just get really proactive. And the long and short is we come here. So now we're in rural North Carolina. We started with 8 acres. We now own 80 acres, about to be 83, on our road. And it's totally epic. And water is abundant here. And we have our own, we have two different wells. We have tons of springs. I mean, water's not an issue in this area. And so this was a huge up level for our family. And as we get here, I don't conceive Sawyer until Suni is almost 5 when I birth Sawyer. So it's a good gap that I am so glad we did. Yeah. And that was a big conversation. You know, most women that are having their families will do like, you know, 2.5 to 3 years. And as that timing came, I was like, hell no. And my kid's easy. Like I had an easy run of it with Suni. She's chill. She sleeps. She's easy. And I didn't get like bowled over it by motherhood like many women do. It was pretty awesome, actually. But anyway, I took it very seriously, as I do. I take, you know, my big decisions with great intention so that they will fare well for me. And it just wasn't the right time. And there was just so much other stuff I wanted to build to hold my growing family. And so as I move into, getting clear that I'm ready to be pregnant again, that was a year and a half ago now. And same thing, I get pregnant on the second round. And I had a whole different set of limiting stories this time. I was like, I've gained too much weight. I haven't exercised enough. I'm too old. Like a whole different set of why surely I, you know, won't be able to do this. And so that was fun to like meet her again. I was like, oh, you're so sweet. Look at you. And this pregnancy, I mean, I don't like to be dramatic about pregnancy and birth because I think it's silly, honestly. And I think it's really about how alienated we are from these experiences that we dramatize them so much. But I will say my pregnancy was pretty hard. And I think I know why. I think I have a good sense of why I set myself up that way. But I was pretty down and out for the first half of it and was going from teaching RBK on a screen, trying not to throw up, teaching, trying to pull all my creative highest consciousness juices to these amazing women who have invested so much and just giving everything I possibly can till the minute it was over. And then I would just walk. I set up a little office next to my bed so that I could just immediately lay down and try to get the room to stop spinning. You know, it was so hard. Yeah.
Wow. It's like your body telling you things, right?
It was full on. Yeah. And that's life, right? That's pregnancy and whatever. It is what it is. Temporary. Yeah. And then we do the festival for the second time. So I didn't really talk about that before because we're going late, but I'm pregnant for the second festival, which was epic. I have a women's festival here that we've scaled by 100 women every year. So the first year was 100, second year was 200 when I was pregnant. And then last year was 300 and this year will be 400. And so I did that at the peak of my pregnancy, like right at the end of second trimester when everything's perfect. And yeah, then we go to Hawaii for a little baby moon with Suni to show her where she was born, to hike her to where we buried her placenta, and just really, you know, be with that our family is changing. And that was amazing. And then we come home and prep for the birth, I guess. I mean, it's kind of funny because what prep do you need after you've had one and after you've already had a free birth? I was maybe like 39 weeks pregnant or something like that. And I'm laying in bed one night, Suni's asleep between me and Johnny. And we haven't really talked about the birth at all. Because, like, what is there to talk about, you know, the second time? And I say to him, you know, yeah. And I say to him, it was like maybe middle of the night. I just go, hey, Johnny, are you awake? And he was like, yeah. I was like, we haven't really talked about the birth. And he was like, what do you want to say? And I was like, if the baby dies, if the baby comes out and is not alive, do not call anyone. And he was like, okay. And I was like, I think that's it. And we just kind of like sat there in silence. And I was like, do you have anything you want to talk about? And he was like, no. I was like, okay, I think we're ready. And I'm not laughing to make light of that at all. I'm laughing because it was such a simple dialogue. In no way am I.
Simple birth plan.
What?
A simple birth plan.
Yeah, simple birth plan. And you know, that is a pretty big and very important topic, because there are stories I know of where women, you know, have free birthed their stillborns and someone in the room doesn't check in with her and they call 911 and you never get those minutes back. You never get that hour back. You know, once you involve authorities, it's done. It's a totally different situation. And there is no reason for that if the baby is gone, right? You can't bring a baby back to life. And so I don't want to ever, if I were to face that reality, which of course I hope I don't, but if I were to face it, I want what I deserve, which is time, you know, time and to do it my way. Yeah. So that was really all I had to say to him. And then I don't exactly know when I birthed with Sawyer. My guess would be like just past 41 weeks, but I took it all even lighter this time. Couldn't care less, to be honest. And yeah, I'll quickly share this birth because it was quicker. It was only 6 hours. And I tell the whole thing in great depth on my podcast if you want to hear it longer. But one of the coolest parts about this birth was that the night before I gave birth, I was drifting off to sleep, or maybe I fell asleep, and I was laying on my side, and I woke up right at midnight. It was exactly the same time as the next night. So I woke up right at midnight and I saw my phone, saw the time, and I was laying there and my third eye was just pulsing, like so crazy, just pulsing. Psychedelic mandalas were just coming out of my third eye, and there was a pulse in my womb and it was pulsing together. And as they pulsed, the visual was in my womb and in my third eye of these mandalas. And it was like pulsing with this word. It was just going bloom, bloom, bloom. And I was like, whoa, like clearly I'm in labor. This is crazy. What is happening? And I just laid there just tripping out basically. And it was just bloom, bloom with every heartbeat, I guess. It was so beautiful. It was so cool. And I laid there and I was like, well, I guess it'll get me up if I need to get up. And the next thing I woke up and the sun was up. And so that was the first night, which of course wasn't labor, but that was like, you know, God being like, get ready, girl.
Yeah.
It was so cool. And then the second night, right at midnight, the exact same thing happened again. And I woke up, I saw my phone, the bloom psychedelic thing happened. But this time there was this like deep, 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 deep ache in my womb. And I was like, oh, okay, this is different. Oh shit. Okay. And by literally, it was like by the second wave, I had to be up, you know, there was no chilling. And so that's it. So I got up and I didn't believe it was real. You know, I was like, oh, something's happening. I'm going to walk around. And then before I knew it, it was very cool because it was very dreamlike. My family was asleep and my conscious mind was just like, yeah, just go with it. It's probably nothing. But my body was lighting candles and what, you know, and was like prepping things. But I wasn't connecting it to my brain. I wasn't like, I have begun the birth process.
Yeah.
At all. But I noticed, it was so funny because I was like having this really psychedelic experience and I was like noticing that I was lighting candles and that I was putting the towels over there. And I was like, oh, that's so funny that I'm doing that, you know? And so at some point my moaning woke Suni up and I had Johnny bring her to sleep with my mom who was in our guest room on the other side of the house, which was like all the plan. And Suni knew that and that was all good. And that felt good. I did not want her there. At all. That was no way. And it couldn't, you know, it's like too full on. I can't believe people do that. Oh my gosh. I mean, I know there's lots of ways to birth, and maybe I'll want my kids around at some point, but
yeah.
This was not the one. Yeah, this was the like freight train. Yeah. Yeah. So basically for the first half of it, it was 6 hours. And for the first half, it was amazing, you know, in the tub. Moaning, chanting, mantras, affirmations, everything good. Totally got it. It was great. And then I get out of the tub. And for the last 3 hours, I'm like, God, kill me now. Like, take me. I'm not surviving this. It was so brutal. It was so brutal.
How come you got out of the tub?
I had to pee or something.
Oh.
And I like wanted to. I like wanted to sit on the toilet. There was a reason I wanted to get out of the water and then I never got back in.
Yeah.
And then when my waters opened, yes, kind of, same thing as I described in my first birth. Like I was, it wasn't a old male voice this time, but I was so aware of my negative mind and my insecurities.
Mm.
And the way I described it when I shared this story on my podcast was, I was very aware as it was unfolding that I was meeting parts of myself that I had never met before. And they were pretty fucked up. They were pretty broken. They were pretty insecure and doubtful. Doubt was so present, but I had enough awareness to know that it was just one of my tracks. It didn't consume me. It was like, oh, okay, so there's something here going, you're too much, you're overreacting, the baby's not really coming. I don't know, just like talking shit to me.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And then there was another track that was like, find your anchors, like, you know, chant your mantras. You know, there were so many tracks at once because it's labor. It's like that. It's so psychedelic. It's so multifaceted. So once my waters opened, then I like believed that I was in labor, you know, I had like full proof. And I believed I was in labor and waters open and that felt great. And I got an oxytocin rush and within seconds I knew I was going to puke. And so I run to the bathroom or to the toilet. I'm already in the bathroom, but we have like a toilet off to the side and I run there and get on my knees. And as I'm purging, it's like an ayahuasca purge. I'm like purging through a wormhole, taking me deeper into the landscape of birth. And I was familiar with doing that kind of crazy shit because of my medicine ceremonies with ayahuasca, but it took me, it was like puking through a wormhole. It's like literally the best way I could describe it. And so I do that and I am high as a kite on the other side of that. My eyes are rolling back in my head. I can't speak, you know, I'm like in it. And this is now like the last, you know, two and a half ish hours of my birth. And I'm pushing and it was just brutal. I was not prepared at all for the physicality of how much it hurt. I never thought Suni's birth really hurt except for maybe the ring of fire. And so that really threw me that I had like already given birth and found it to be like fairly manageable. And then with the 6 hour birth, I was like, I'm going to die. I am dying. Like it didn't make sense. The sensations were so overwhelming.
Yeah.
You know, it actually felt like my hips were breaking, which of course I've heard hundreds of women exclaim that.
Yeah.
And I didn't get it at all.
Yeah.
How could you get it? You know, until you feel like your hips are breaking. And yeah, I just, man, I can't even tune in to give this part the right words. It was so intense. And I just kept saying to Johnny, or at one point I half joking, half seriously was like, I got the wrong order. Like, this was not the birth I was supposed to get, you know? And so very humbled, of course, as birth does, and go through that. I'm pushing. I'm noticing that when I have his full presence, I feel like I can handle it. I feel like I can choose positive affirmations. Like, when he was fully present with me, I would find myself saying things like, I choose this. I want this. I want this. Like, I choose it. And I would just keep saying that. And when he would check his phone or get me water or whatever, I would be like untethered. And I didn't feel like I was okay. So that was interesting, just as a reminder of space holding and how, like, there is no greater responsibility, you know? It's just so intense. It's like the most intense. Yeah. And so eventually I was convinced I was going to die. And so I went and just flopped like a dead fish on my bed, just basically like ready to die. Like, I didn't care about my baby. I didn't care about anything. I just was like, this is the part where I die. That's great. Let's be done. And I had stacked some pillows on my bed and I just like flopped on this pile of pillows and just, yeah, just felt like a dead fish. And then he finally dropped down into my vulva where I could like really feel, oh, there's a head. And that was the absolute worst part. Oh my God.
It was so horrible. I love to listen because I feel like we all get what we have to get so that we can move on with what we are doing, you know?
It was so horrible. It was not orgasmic. Like, at one point I was just trying to like claw him out. I just needed like his head was out and not his body. I was like, this just needs to be so done. Yeah, it was really horrible. And then, and at one, yeah, I remember when he was coming down, he felt kind of like a rubber chicken. And for a second, I thought maybe he was breached, because, you know, you can't like tell what's happening for a while. It's like, God, it's all just so weird. And so then I had Johnny go look, and he was like, no, it's his head, but his hand is up by his head. So he'd come down with a nuchal hand, which maybe had something to do with just like how much it hurt, but also it was my resistance. It was my hip and knee chronic issues. It was my probably like lack of great sex at the end, you know, it's a whole constellation, right? Anyway, but so he finally comes out, and that's where you saw the video of his transition. And there's really nothing interesting about that video except that no one has seen babies be born. And so it's interesting because no one understands anything about human babies. It's not an interesting video. It's literally just a baby transitioning, but people think it's a special video because it took him quite a few minutes to transition. I don't know. It's really just,
yeah,
not that interesting.
Because in the video, it looks limp, isn't it? At
it
that
is.
Moment. Yeah.
But only for like a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how long it was, but I think like it's just because he's on video and everybody's like,
he doesn't cry right away. Like, you're all conditioned in the movies to hear.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it same as Sunye, you know, I had already had a baby come out like that. So I just didn't think anything of it. And there was meconium again. Didn't think anything of that. I don't care. You know, that's like, I'm also not like looking for problems, you know, that's not like a cool way to approach your baby's birth. Been there, done that. I saw what I got with that. I just created a bunch of drama. So yeah, I mean, that birth kicked my ass. I was reeling from that birth. I didn't like fully come back in to my full grounded state for many weeks. It really, really rocked me. It wasn't bad or anything. I mean, the pain, I guess I could say I felt was bad, but like, it just kicked my ass in the best way. I'm so grateful for it. It was so good. Whew. It's good to get an ass kicking every now and then, you know? It's good for you if it's like, you know, from the ethers. Yeah, so
intense. It was intense, I think.
Yeah, and just so much ego stripping that you don't even like know. Yeah, and I found anchors, you know, in me that I didn't know I had. I found strength in me I didn't know I had. I mean, this is part of what I think women are overlooking, because all these women are talking about pain-free birth and orgasmic birth. And it's like, no, you're missing the whole thing. Like, that's great. Like, if that's what you can manifest, that sounds so cool. Another track that also has high value is you go through the depths of hell and you survive. And you've seen, you've hit your edges of what you thought your capacity was, and you learn that you're stronger than you ever knew, and who you are, you know, on the other side of finding new depths to your strength, to your will, to your commitment, to your baby, to your vision, to your truth. I mean, that's pretty epic. You know, that's a pretty big deal. Like, I am so much stronger, more clear, more grounded, more like focused than I've ever been. And in large part, I would contribute the threshold I traveled, you know.
Yeah. You really did amazing. Because I don't know how I would have done with a really super intense, painful birth. I would be like, no, that's it. I'm not going to be a midwife. That's it. I'm done. Bye.
Well, another cool thing is that I did go through that, and it never occurred to me once that I shouldn't be where I was, which was really cool. And I'm grateful that I've like lived that now.
Yeah.
Like, leaving my house or going to some hospital didn't even enter my brain, which really revealed to me the work I've done, that that's not a place I want to be. And can I be in my bathroom and face myself? And actually I'll maybe end all of this on that note, because in my first birth, I chose to have my sister and then, a very good friend of mine and my husband be my holders. And like I said at the beginning, there were pros and cons to that. And I was very clear after Suni's birth, and as I got ready to call Sawyer in, I was very clear that I would be alone with this birth for the majority of it. And you know, Johnny, it's not that he doesn't count, but his presence, he's so finely tuned to me, and he is so truly grounded, and he's like, his whole essence is like an oak tree. He's like very calm, very grounded. There's no shaky energy to him. You know, like I hugged someone recently. It was a male, and I hugged him recently, and I could feel his anxiety just in the hug. It was like shaky. And it really made me think, like, yeah, Johnny doesn't have that at all. He's just like rooted. So anyway, so his energy is like that. So he was around, he was there, but I don't know. It feels like it is a person. I wasn't alone, but I'm really referring to women, you know, and that I knew I would face this alone. And I also, I guess what I'm saying is I really had total trust in Johnny's ability to not fuck with my process at all. He never spoke. Actually, at the very end, when I was losing my mind, I was like, it would be nice if you could just like say something encouraging. If he was silent, and he goes, you're doing great. Your body knows what to do. And I was like, shut up. Never mind. Go back to being silent.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. Not that you made me think. Actually, my husband even didn't say anything at all. I'm like,
yeah, did you say something? I don't need that.
No, I didn't. It was just sitting there and just patting my.
Yeah. But my point is, I knew with Sawyer that I needed to know who I was without anyone there. I needed to know what there was for me to learn about myself, and what did I need to face about myself, not having an option to outsource or get heroed or get reassurance. and I was ready. And I'm proud of that. You know, I've worked my fucking ass off to get to a place in my own relationship to self that I'm ready to meet myself in one of the hardest physical, maybe spiritual things I'll do, you know, and I'm proud of that. And it wasn't easy. Whew. It was not easy. But Yolanda, you know, Yolanda has 10 children now.
Yeah, I love her. My gosh, bless her.
I text her afterwards and I'm like, it was so fucked up. And she had, you know, for anyone who doesn't know, she kind of came out after her 9th birth and said she finally figured out how to have an orgasmic birth. So I texted her and was like, this was so fucked up. It was so horrible. And she just texts me back like, you'll definitely figure it out by the 9th.
I love her. I love her. Oh my gosh.
And then same thing. Postpartum was epic. Postpartum was everything it could possibly be. I did everything, you know, my setup was as good as it could be. We hired a postpartum chef that stayed for 2 months and lived on our land in a yurt and made 3 meals a day for our family. That was our big investment for the birth. Obviously, free birth doesn't cost anything. So yeah, I invested in that and it was one of the best things I've ever done. And it was just absolutely euphoric, absolutely perfect. And, you know, you never get those early weeks back. It's just one of the most magical times in a person's life. So we really slowed down. I didn't even open my computer for, I think, like 4 weeks and just stayed high as a kite in total ecstasy. It was so good.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for sharing. Honestly, I think they're two beautiful stories. And it's amazing for me, especially, you know, to listen to the full stories and see how, you know, each story has kind of brought you to where you are right now. And I guess, like, for me, I've following you for like a very long time, and I love this version of you, so well done.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was fun to revisit them.
Yes. Would you want to add anything for, you know, women that are listening to this podcast?
Just that you can learn about everything we're doing at freebirthsociety.com. And we have a podcast of women's free birth stories. So you can listen to that. There's hundreds of women on there, and join, you know, you and I both in our membership. And yeah, we just got lots of fun stuff going on. So it's fun to be here and cross pollinate.
Yes. Beautiful, beautiful. Make sure you go and follow Emily, because she's got lots of wisdom. And as I said, I would not be here if it was not for you. And actually, yesterday I was talking to another twin mom and she just said the same. She's like, oh my gosh, I free birthed my twin if it was not for Emily and your story. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm so happy. Amazing. Because it's just like everything is just spreading, you know? And I don't know, it's just so amazing. Like the work you've been doing, like it's like now, is rippling effect, you know?
Oh yeah.
So
big time.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, my friend, thank you so much for listening again. I think we are in for something really special in this podcast. Let's start this new movement. Hey, buckle up. There's a lot of new things and awesome things that you're gonna hear from me. And as you know, just do me a favor, please. Just take a screenshot, put it in your stories, and tag me. I promise I will definitely reshare you. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.